Before diving into the episode, I'd like to say something. I'm David from Niner Empire Germany, and although our podcast is typically in German, today we are reaching out to our English-speaking audience. Over the past 4 years, our podcast has been dedicated to providing 49ers fans in Germany, Austria, and Switzerland with updates on the team and Niner Empire Germany. In the meantime, we've grown to almost 1,000 members. We recently hosted a watch party in Frankfurt with nearly 200 attendees, and over 60 of us gathered for the home game against the Buccaneers at Levi's Stadium in November. A special shout out to Raj Prasad from the Niner Empire organization. Thanks for having us and caring about us all the time. You're a real one. Same to my man Antonio Tony Arevalo, the king of tailgating. You made our trip to the Bay Area in Seattle special. And Sam Tam from Gold Bar Whiskey. All of them contributed to unforgettable moments in both Santa Clara and Seattle. Lastly, Denise from the Niner Empire organization has been a reliable contact for us. In addition to that, we want to greet Matt Miyoko and Jennifer Lee Chan, Brian and his cousin from Fake Kyle Shanahan, and a special thank you to Steve Tang and Timur Beckmann for connecting us with Coach Tom Sula. Before starting this episode, let me express our gratitude to all chapters in the US and worldwide for their support. If you're curious about our journey, stay tuned. And now, have fun with our guys from Niner Empire Germany and Coach Tom Sula.
Herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Episode des Niner Empire Germany Outside Zone Talks, deinem deutschsprachigen 49ers Podcast. Viel Spaß beim Hören und Go Niners!
Yeah, thanks David, and welcome to a very special episode of our show. As you already heard, we have a special guest today for you guys. And I'm talking about the current head coach of Rheinfire and the former D-line coach and head coach from our San Francisco 49ers, Jim Tom Sula. Welcome, Jim. We're really excited to have you here.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here too, guys. I really appreciate you giving me the opportunity to be on here and spend some time with you.
That's awesome. Thank you so much. And yeah, before we will start talking about the Niners, we have a question about you and about Germany. So you started coaching in Germany already in 2006, if I got that right. And our question is, how did the contact with Germany emerge and what do you appreciate the most in Germany or off Germany?
Okay, well, first of all, what happened for me is very, it's untraditional, but you guys are too young probably, but the NFL had a league in Europe called the NFL Europe League. And I joined up with the NFL Europe League. I was hired to go to the London Monarchs when I was about 25 or 26 years old. And that was back in like, 1997, I think, you know, you get older. But anyway, so I worked in England. I called my wife. I said, hey, you want to go to Europe? She said, heck yeah, let's go. So we had two daughters. Our daughters were like 3-1 or 4-2. And we loaded up and went to England. We coached for the England Monarchs for a year. And then we went to the Scottish Claymores for 5 years. And then while I was with the Scottish Claymores, we got heavily involved with the International Player Development Program. And Tony Allen was a guy that was heading that, handling personnel throughout Europe. So Richard Kent, who's our defensive coordinator with the Rheinfire, and I both worked with Tony, and we went all over Europe. We've been everywhere looking for players, scouting, doing combines. And from Scotland, we went to Berlin. We actually lived in Berlin for 2 years in a place called Telto, and was a wonderful time. And then our last stop, we had the opportunity to go to the Rheinfire. They had a head coaching opening, so we went down there, and obviously Dusseldorf and the Rheinfire and the football, the people, it was incredible. And we just loved it. But then I was offered a job to go from the Rheinfire to the San Francisco 49ers to coach the defensive line. So we took that opportunity and we left right after the 2006 or 7 season. And we were there for a long time. I was a D-line coach for a long time. And then I was the head coach. I was there 1 year as a head coach. I was fired and went home, retired.
And one game before, right? I think it was in 2010 or 11.
I was the interim head coach earlier. Yes, yes. And I loved my time with the Niners. Just loved it. I have to tell you that Dr. John York, Denise DeBartolo York, Jed's parents are phenomenal people, phenomenal family. They do so much in their communities. They give back so much. And Jed is really a class act guy. All right. So I want all your fans to know that. That's a family that really, they're good people. They're really salt of the earth, good people. And so we had a great time there, really enjoyed it. And again, at the time I became the head coach, there was a lot of transition going on. There were a lot of players and, you know, there were a couple of problems and my job was to straighten those things out. And I felt good about that part, but I didn't do a good enough job of us winning on the field. I didn't. Okay. And that's the nature of that business. You know, you win or you lose. And, hell, I think we won 5 games. It was a tough year, but
I still remember that year.
Yeah, I will always be very grateful to the York family for providing me that opportunity. They just even when at the end of the season, when it was time for them to let me go, just the way they handled that, the way Dr. York was, it's, you know, he was a human. He was human about it. And Jed too. I mean, they're good people. You all are rooting for the family that owns that team is first class.
That's always good to hear. Yeah. Thank you.
Coach, before we start talking about the Niners, we have to talk about some breaking news inside the division. The Seattle Seahawks have announced that they are parting ways with Pete Carroll. You've coached against him several times. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, again, you know, it is a the business of the National Football League is, I mean, it's business. I mean, let's understand that. And you know, everybody talks about the money involved, and I understand that part of it. But what you also have to what I try to realize is for the fan base. I mean, we're talking about somebody in Vienna and somebody in NRV, okay. And you're diehard fans and you're doing a podcast, you've got all these people that are going to listen to you and they're diehard fans. You've got a 49er sweatshirt on, okay? You didn't get that for free. You bought that, okay? You're passionate fans. You spend your hard-earned money on merchandise or trying to see a game or doing things like that. So you know, in that sense, you know, you as a coach, as a player, I mean, you owe it to your fans to produce. You do. And there's nothing wrong with your fans being demanding and wanting a winner. There isn't anything wrong with that, okay? Now, I think there is a little bit of a disconnect between a fan and people that are living the daily life in the National Football League. It's not a job. It's a way of life. So when you get into the National Football League, it's not like you're going to your 9-to-5 job. Okay. It's a way of life. During that season, I mean, you've got 16 Sundays, 16 weekends that you got to be there. So, you know, but you do make a good paycheck. Okay. But certain things like if your children are in the school play or your children have events going on, you're not going to be there. If you're, you know, there's been deaths in the family and I'm not there. There's been marriages in the family. I'm not there. Because it's that way of life. And what everybody has to understand is when you join up for that, that football team is depending on you on whatever role you have. That you have 1 week to prepare and win a football game. And it's a jam-packed week. And there's a lot of work that has to get done. And they, all those people are depending on you to get those things done so that we can all have a chance to win the game in the end. So when you talk about Pete Carroll right now, he spent his life in football. You know, he's with the Seattle Seahawks. Obviously, I was with the San Francisco 49ers. I do not like the Seattle Seahawks, okay? You know, we've got that Marshawn Lynch, who I respect tremendously, but my Lord, did he give me headaches, okay? And Pete obviously did a nice job with the Seahawks, okay? But it's run its course, and they're looking for change. It's the ownership has decided that it's not going in the place that they want it to go. So they're going to bring somebody else in to get it back into a path that they want it to be on. So I don't have any thoughts. I don't feel bad for Pete Carroll. Okay. Yeah. He's going to be just fine. All right. He'll be able to pay his rent. He'll be able to pay his bills. He'll be just fine. Okay. You just see what he goes to from there, you know?
Yeah. It's really interesting, to hear it, in a perspective from you as a coach and someone who worked or is still working in the business. And I think that gives us a really good perspective on that as well. So I think we should start to talk about, the team we love, the 49ers, a little bit more. And our question would be, our next question, are you still following the Niners? And how did you experience, especially this season until now?
Well, I'll tell you what. I don't really follow any particular team. I'm really involved with ELF, and I'm really involved with we've started this Tom Sula Football Academy, and we're doing some things that way to grow the game in Europe. So most of my time in football is spent in Germany, you know, talking about, thinking about, working through Germany and Europe. But what I do is I follow more players, guys that I have coached that are throughout the league. And I'll take a look just to see how are those guys doing, how are things happening. Of course, I've got some old players that'll call me, hey, did you see the game? Can you turn that on? Can you take a look at this? What do you think? You know, those, you know, just having conversation. Because you really do get attached. I mean, you build bonds with people. And so that's what I do. The Niners, I'll tell you, at the time when the year before I was the head coach there, Jim Harbaugh's last year, we were 8-8. Okay. The year before that, we went to the Super Bowl. Okay. Then we came back, we were 8-8, and there was a decline happening. Our roster was older. We had retirements. We had some other players that just weren't fitting into the character side of things that the DeBartolo York family wanted. So there was a lot of turnover, and I was in there for a year, and then Chip Kelly came in and it dropped a little bit more. And when the 49ers hired John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan, I mean, that was just two fantastic hires. I mean, these guys, they hired really competent, smart guys, and guys that are passionate about football. And I actually tried to hire Kyle Shanahan as our offensive coordinator when I was the head coach there. And that was when he had left Cleveland, and he had an opportunity to come to the Niners or go to the Atlanta Falcons with Matty Ice. And he chose to go to the Atlanta Falcons with Matty Ice and ended up going to the Super Bowl. So I think he made the right decision. Okay. But really the job they've done, the way they flipped that roster, the way they've drafted, the way they've signed their free agency, the way they handle things, it is just their brand of football, tough, hard-nosed, punch in the mouth style. I mean, look at the story on Brock Purdy. I mean, do you guys understand? Everybody in the NFL passed that guy up for the entire draft. And the Niners draft him. I mean, that is, talk about like really smart, really good, really thorough work. I mean, that is just great. But you know, with Kittle there, I was with Trent Williams, the left tackle. I was with him in Washington. Okay, I mean, they put that guy on that O-line. All right, then they go get McCaffrey, for God's sakes. Okay, Dabo. I mean, you look at what they've done on that offense and the way they've done it. Okay, still one of the few teams that plays with a true fullback, and that guy's a hell of a fullback. You know, so you've really got, I mean, what they've done there, then you turn around on the defensive side of the ball. Okay, look, Bosa, I did the interviews with Bosa. Okay, I knew I wasn't going to get him. I was in Washington at that time. I knew I wasn't going to get him. He wasn't going to make it that far. Okay? But, I mean, the Niners went in there and scooped up Bosa. I mean, look at that guy. Okay? And look what they're doing there. Now they've made the move with Chase Young. You know, and Chase Young there, he's a guy that's extremely talented. And he's going to be back with Nick. And Nick will help him out. You know, Nick was older than him before, and he looks after him a little bit. And you've just got a great – and then their coaching staff, guys. Their coaching staff. They've got a hell of a coaching staff. And they've lost coaches. These guys are going and getting head coaching jobs. Okay? I mean, you can't do anything but congratulate the way they're doing their business. It's the way it is. Guys, it is – there's been one team in the history of the league that's been undefeated. Okay? And when you look at people trying to win back-to-back or win consistently and do those things, I mean, what the 49ers are doing right now is tremendous. It's tremendous. And I grew up in Pittsburgh with the Pittsburgh Steelers. And, you know, we're not going to get on a tangent with the Steelers, but, you know, halfway through this season, everybody's talking about Mike Tomlin getting fired and he's lost it. Well, you know what? If your really bad season is that you won 10 football games, and you went to the playoffs? Come on, man. You know?
Not really. Not that bad, yeah.
Oh, I mean, it's very good. You know, and they're struggling at the quarterback position, and they just keep fighting. I mean, I just admire these kind of things. So from afar, I admire the hell out of what the 49ers are doing.
I mean, you touched on Brock Purdy and on his story. He's playing a tremendous season, and a lot of players, a lot of people still disrespect him. What are your thoughts on Brock Purdy and his level of play? Because I feel like people don't appreciate how hard it is to play at that level in the NFL, no matter who plays with you and in which offense you're playing.
All right, so do me a couple of favors here. The first thing is, let's remind everybody, where did Brock Purdy play college football?
Iowa State.
Okay. Is that Notre Dame? Is that USC? Is that Michigan?
No.
I mean, is that Clemson? No. Okay. It's a good football program. It really is. But when you talk about not necessarily the game, but everything around the game that you have to handle and manage, the publicity, the PR, the money, the people, the alumni, the pressure that comes from the outside. Okay. He didn't have that. So he shows up in San Francisco. Now, I lived there for 10 or 11 years. I worked in that environment. Guys, they are some unbelievable fans. And it is, it can feel like Hollywood sometimes. You go in the locker room after a game, and I mean, you've got Hollywood stars in there, you know, high-fiving you and things like that. It's a different world. There's a lot to handle there, okay? The media in San Francisco is a bit rough. They're hard, okay? And you know, for Brock Purdy to come in there, get drafted at the end, and then handle himself the way he's handling himself, I mean, that's fantastic. I think it's fantastic. I think it's just terrific. He stays grounded. He keeps his head in the right place. He keeps his emotions in the right place. He's always well prepared. He goes out and he gives you a great brand of football. Now, are things going to go wrong? Yes. Okay. And is he going to be a better quarterback 2 more years from now? Yes. That's because experience. So right now, a game might go bad, and there may be a few bad plays there. And that particular day, he may not understand how to adjust to it. But after he goes through that, then he goes back and learns, oh, that's what happened. So now I know the next time. So those tough days are what are really getting him right for the future. And that's experience. That's by playing. So I think what he's done, not only on the field in his play, and obviously his preparation, which obviously you have to go back and talk about Kyle Shanahan and the play development, the structure of the offense, and the way they're doing things, you know, and the surrounding cast, they're doing a great job for him. And the way they're doing it, it's complementary, player to coach and coach to player. And again, I'm talking from afar, and I just I admire it. I think he's done just a great job. And he seems to be just tremendously grounded. And he seems to me, when I hear other players stepping up and defending or speaking on his behalf, then, I mean, those guys really believe in this guy. You earn that kind of stuff by the way you act. So I've got a lot of respect for Brock Purdy.
Let's talk about the player you drafted, you scouted, Arik Armstead. It's been one of your draft picks. You drafted him in the first round. How do you follow him, and what is he? What kind of guy is he?
Arik, again, if you look it up, does a lot in the community. He does a lot of things in the education side of things. I believe he's still working in the schools and doing things that way. You know, his family, Arik was a basketball player. And his family comes out of the basketball business. And Arik coming in, he's a huge human. He's very tall. I mean, I think his arms are as long as I am tall. Obviously he's had a really, really good career. And he's still going. He's playing good football. You know, now he's had some injuries, some dings, and he's missed his time, you know, sometimes. But, I mean, just turn on the film and watch the game on TV and you see what a hell of a job he does there.
Yeah. I think he's been awesome the whole time he was in San Francisco, and he was around, yeah, I think nearly every year they had a really good D-line. Even when you were coaching, they were fantastic players, and now they're also fantastic players. And also this season, they have a tremendous quality, but they've been less dominant in terms of sacks this year. Is there something that you can say about that? Why, or better asked, what can be the reason for a really good defensive line, but they're not finishing it in terms of sacks? Is there something about it what you can tell us?
Well, what you've got to understand is the other teams have coaches too. Okay? So if I'm going to play, you know, last year, maybe I'm trying to get the ball down the field. Maybe I'm having longer route concepts to take a little bit more time. Maybe I'm putting 5 receivers out in routes, and I'm not using the back and the tight end to help chip the edges or give a max protection. Okay. And again, I haven't studied it, but I would imagine that after last year's deal, that this year people are blocking with 6 and 7. keeping a running back or a tight end in there to chip and help out with a protection. I would also think that they're getting a lot more quick routes and fast timing routes. Okay. So the ball's coming out of the quarterback's hand faster. All right. So, again, what we have to look at is how is the defense as a whole performing? They're very well. They're playing very good. Yeah. Okay. So if you're forcing a team, if a team can't drop back and throw 20 and 30 yard passes all day, now they've got to start throwing 4 and 5 yard routes. Okay. So those are going to get caught. And then the secondary guys and the linebackers are going to tackle them. You're going to see the outside screen stuff. So you're going to see, you know, the RPO game. I mean, all those things are to prevent the quarterback from being sacked. So, but if you are able to force a team to do that, then that improves your chances of winning. So you have to look at the whole overall production of the team and the overall production of the defense. And I think in both categories, you've got something for real there.
Yeah.
The Niners clinched the number one seed in week 17 and they arrested some key starters in week 18. Now they have another week off. How would you assess this strategy? Would you have played them in week 18?
Well, you know what? That's now here's what I call Monday morning quarterback talk. Okay? This is what I call that. That has to be the decision of the coach, and the coach has to know his team. He's got to know who he's got. Okay? So let's think about it. Your goal when you start the season is to win the Super Bowl. Okay? So you talk about that. You set that goal. Every team in the league does. And then you don't talk about it anymore. Now you go about your business trying to win enough games to get yourself in the playoffs and get yourself in the best suited position to get in the playoffs. So to get the number one seed and now get the open week, all right, that's a big deal for the whole team. And then to do it early and be able to have an extra week, so you're going to play that last game. And, for instance, Trent Williams. All right, well, if we go into a playoff game, and I've got now I'm sudden death because I have to win the playoff games or I go home. So everything now is a Super Bowl because the minute you don't win, you go home. So if you think about it this way, am I better off? Are my chances of winning my next playoff game better with a fully healthy and rested Trent Williams and McCaffrey and Dabo and Bosa? Or do I play them and then maybe they get dinged up and maybe they're not playing it at full strength? Okay. Now, the other option is people say, well, you got to keep playing them because you need to try to win every game. Well, they're trying to win every game. They're just giving other guys an opportunity. The guys that are going in for them are still pro football players. It's not like me and you are out there. They've got pro football players. They're pretty good. Okay? So you are giving those guys a chance to get out there and play, help their development, because at some point you may need them to play in a game more. So they get those opportunities to do that. And then you have people want to say, well, that's too much time off. Okay, well, if you've played in the NFL for 8 years, I mean, Trent Williams is what, 15 years? Yeah. Okay, I mean, really, I'm worried about giving him too much time. Like, what's he going to forget it? You know what I mean? You know, yeah, so, yeah. You know, now, if you have a real young team, if you have a real young team or you have a team, you have players that can't handle that much time off and they maybe do get distracted, well, then you'll see some coaches say, no, I'm playing my guys. But they're not going to say, hey, I'm playing my guys because they're not mature enough to handle it. They're not going to tell you that. They're going to say that in the paper. They're going to say, no, we're going to play every game to win. We're going to play our guys and we're going to keep our foot on the pedal. Okay. but again, when you just said number one seed clinched the playoffs before the season ended, well, I mean, I don't know that we second guess Kyle Shanahan. He's done a pretty damn good job to this point. He's gotten us here. I got to trust that his decisions, if I'm a fan, I got to trust that his decision's been pretty damn good, you know, and he knows his team and he knows what to do, and he's doing it. So I really don't have a, I agree with him 100% because that's what he did. Okay. You know, that's the way I see that. The team, we were 5-11. Okay. We didn't have that problem. We weren't playing in that game. That's just the facts.
Yeah, so just in general, nothing especially about the 49ers. What would you say is the main difference just for you to be a head coach in comparison to, for example, to be a D-line coach as you were? And would you say you like it more to be a head coach and, yeah, in command of nearly everything? Or would you say, nah, it was better to be only for the D-line and only coaching those guys?
Okay, well, I'm not going to compare it to the ELF. Okay, and I'll explain that in a second. But I'm a the National Football League, I'm a D-line coach. I'm not a head coach. I love, my favorite job in the world is to walk into a room with a group of D-linemen and coach D-line. I love it. Absolutely love it. Okay? And loved every minute of it. And I love the characters in the room. I love the way it goes. Those guys are obviously a little bit, there's high testosterone. It's high. you're talking about gladiators now, modern day gladiators. And it's remarkable to be in a room with those guys and just be a small part of teaching them something or helping them in some way to be more successful or to have that ultimate success. So that was absolutely my favorite job. Always has been, always will be. Okay. The thing with the ELF, this is a little different because obviously I'd spent a lot of time in Europe. My passion project, and this is what this is for my wife and I, we don't make any money, okay? We do this because it's a passion. We were over there years ago. We saw the players that played the game and the coaches and the sacrifices they made. I mean, you want to play football in Germany, guys go buy a helmet for $400 or $500. Then I got to buy shoulder pads. Then they show up to the team, and then they got to pay the team, pay the club to play. And then, yeah, God forbid you make it to the playoffs, because if you do make it to the playoffs and it's an away game, I got to show up with $50 for my seat on the bus. Okay? I just saw that, and so I thought that was so incredible that people love this game that much. So it was always our dream to go back to Europe and coach football once we were done in the National Football League. And so with my experiences up to this point, the job I have now with the Rhine Fire is, I love it. I love it, guys. I love it. It's a lot of challenges. There's things I got to learn every day, you know, and a hell of a coaching staff. Ownership, front office, everything, very good. And people that will tell me when I'm wrong. People will tell me when I'm making a mistake. And we really all share together. And I it's a blast and it's growing. You guys have been to Rye Fire games, I'm sure. I hope you have. Okay. And, oh, you got to get there, brother. Come on, my man. Oh,
if you get me the flight, I'm coming over.
now you're trying to get a flight on me, huh? You know, it's just, there's nothing like it. Our power party and our fans. It's, look, you've been there. He knows. Just to ask
you. I've been to. Yeah, I will.
You go to that power party now? It's insane. They are so much fun. Our fans are unbelievable, and they're so kind, so welcoming. Doesn't matter who you're cheering for. You're a football fan, and they're going to help you. They're going to buy you beer. They're going to help you to seat. They're going to cheer for their team. You're going to cheer for yours. When your team makes a good play, they're going to tell you, "Hey, good play." And at the end of the day, whoever wins, whoever doesn't, they're going to go have another beer. Okay? And it's just a great, healthy, exciting, wonderful atmosphere. And you can bring all your kids. We have people in wheelchairs. We've had a guy that took the ambulance people. All right, I want to tell you this real quick. We had a guy that was in hospital that was dying in Amsterdam. And he was an old Rhein Fire fan from back in the NFL Europe days. And he was telling the people there he wanted to get to a Rhein Fire game before he passed. Honest to God, the people at the hospital put this guy in an ambulance. The ambulance people volunteered. They drove this guy from Amsterdam to Dusseldorf. He was rolled in on a gurney on the bed with his IVs and his oxygen mask, and he sat in the wheelchair section and he watched the game. And when I went up there after the game and saw this man, I could not, it blew me away. And to see all of our fans coming down and congratulating them and giving them that one afternoon of unbelievable, it was just, you got to get, all right, I'm going to stop. You don't want me to talk about Rhein Fire, but I had to tell you that. That's unique, guys.
That's very crazy.
Awesome story. Yeah.
Yep. So. We don't have any hooligans, boys. We don't have any of that, nor will we. We will not put up with it. You're a hooligan, you're not welcome. You're not welcome. Okay? I'm going to tell you, any of that nonsense is going on, I'll tell you what. I'm walking up into the stands. I'm leaving the sidelines, and I'm going up and ask for those guys to get removed. We're not going to have that. We're going to make this a friendly, family, just a beautiful afternoon of sport.
Yeah,
I mean, that makes football special here in Europe. I mean, we are far away from the NFL, but we are as passionate as all these Americans. I mean, I can only speak for myself.
Don't sell yourself short. You said as passionate. I dare say you might be more passionate. I really, Americans aren't up at 3 o'clock in the morning trying to watch the football game.
Yeah, I mean, okay? Lars me and Lars, we went to, in November, we went to a game, and we are going next week to the divisional round. So we are spending pretty much money on this team just to cheer for them. And I'm also staying for the championship game. So we are completely committed to this team.
That's just wonderful, guys. That's wonderful. And it's a great stadium. It really is. And it's a great environment at a Niners game.
Yeah. So really awesome story. And to hear you talking about football here in Germany. So I think it's a really good thing for all of us that football is growing here. And with having you, not right now, but having you over here for the season in Germany. And I think many of our listeners went to ELF, GLF games already, and hopefully they will continue that, and maybe someone will start doing it because, yeah, as you know, they're playing when the NFL is not. So I think that would be a great opportunity, and yeah, it's really awesome to hear. Lucas, do you still got another question to
I mean coach? I know you have a meeting coming up, but one last question: are the Niners going to win the Super Bowl?
You know what, you know, I'm not a prediction guy, but I'll tell you, I hope so. I really do, with the things they're doing there and just the way it is, and some of the people I still know there, whether it's people make fun of me for Joan in payroll, but the people that work in those offices and the people that help you on the day-to-day, from the custodians to the people in the front office, to the security guards. Still, some of the equipment managers are there, and just Steve Rizzer doing the travel. I mean, just so many great people that are still there. I just wish them the best, man. So I hope they do. I really do, because they're good enough, guys. We all know that they're good enough. But you're in the NFL, so you're fighting for it every week.
Yeah, I think everybody is hoping for the Niners winning the Super Bowl, and we're happy to hear that you're also hoping that. And yeah, I think with that, we are coming to the end of our episode. It was a blast to have you here, Coach Tomsula. We're really grateful for that. And yeah, so thank you very, very much. We had a great time. And yeah, we would be happy to see you on a game at Rhinefire, or maybe sometime again in this podcast. And yeah, I think that's it from us. And thank you very much.
Well, thank you, guys. And if you're ever at a Rhinefire game, make sure you reach out and let me know. Okay?
And, we will do that. Yeah.
I really appreciate what you're doing. Have great trips to the games. Enjoy yourself. Got me? And keep having fun with this, guys. Keep having fun. All right? Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Coach. We could listen to you all day long, but let's wrap it up for this time.
Give me my German word. Auf Wiedersehen. Is it Guten Abend or is it Guten Nacht yet?
It's Guten Abend. I think it's,
yeah.
So, bye-bye, yeah. Guys. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Das war der Niner Empire Germany Outside Zone Talk. Streamt und abonniert uns auf allen gängigen Kanälen unter @49ersEmpireGER.